Welcome to the 73 Dream Studios Variety Show. Hello, everyone, and welcome to our new show, Comic Chatter, where I get to talk all things comics, whether that's the graphic novels themselves, the movies, the shows, or whatever form of media it may take in the future. I mean, according to Cyberpunk, we're only 50-some-odd years away from having whole memories imprinted into the data drives of our minds. And if you thought that last statement was weird, wait until we really dive into the lesser-known works that are on print out there. But for now, I'm sticking with something that's more mainstream. Something that's crashing ticket websites all over the web. This character catches thieves like they were flies. He's the Amazing Spider-Man. And in just a couple weeks, the latest film to feature the character, titled Spider-Man No Way Home, is set to debut. So before I hide myself in the hole in a bid to avoid spoilers that is inevitably doomed to fail, I'm going to be discussing all of the hype, including segments on the prior live-action portrayals of the character, what plots are being adapted for this latest film, giving my own personal theories based off the footage that has been released, and answering one of the many divisive questions in nerd culture. Who played the better Spider-Man? Now, before I really get into the nitty-gritty, some of you may be asking, who is Spider-Man? And to you I say, welcome to another wonderful subculture of nerdism. The original and most famous iteration of Spider-Man is Peter Parker, a teenage nerd who was bitten by a radioactive spider and thus gained abilities like wall crawling and the proportionate strength of a spider. Being a young genius, Peter would also design wrist-mounted devices called web shooters and a formula that would act as webbing that he could both swing from and catch evildoers in. In the comic Amazing Fantasy No. 15, Peter would attempt to use these newfound powers for profit. After allowing a robber to get away with some money, he would discover the same robber had killed Peter's Uncle Ben. From this point on, Peter would swear to remember the important words that Uncle Ben had tried teaching him, that with great power comes great responsibility. Since that comic, which hit stands in 1962, Spider-Man has had countless spin-offs, television shows, video game appearances, and action figures released. But today, I'll be covering specifically his live-action adaptations. To be clear, I'm going to briefly overlook the Sam Raimi trilogy starring Tobey Maguire, the Amazing duology starring Andrew Garfield, and the Tom Holland-centric trilogy. We're going to save his appearances in Civil War, Infinity War, and Endgame for one more day. Wink. First, we have the Sam Raimi trilogy. Releasing the first ever Spider-Man film in 2002, the sequel Spider-Man 2 in 2004, and the less than a critically acclaimed Spider-Man 3 in 2007. Starring Tobey Maguire as Spider-Man, the first film would feature Peter Parker as a senior for the first half of the runtime, featuring the aforementioned origin story with little changes. This movie is also partially to blame for my early love of wrestling, as it features WWE Hall of Famer Macho Man Randy Savage as Pierce's cage match opponent. The film would focus on introducing the important characters in Spider-Man's life to the audience, and establishing those connections. Back in this era, it wasn't cool to like superheroes, so it was easy to assume that a lot of people weren't aware that Harry Osborn was Peter's best friend, or that Mary Jane Watson was Peter Parker's amazing girlfriend. So to start, we get the slow burn of love, all the while getting the origin of Willem Dafoe's Green Goblin, a character that would be forever known as the king of Spider-Man's rogues gallery. Sony, who had purchased the film rights to Spider-Man and any associated characters, did not shy away from the PG-13 rating, displaying the twisted machinations of the Goblin, as he would terrorize J. Jonah Jameson to give up the photographer that catches photos of Spider-Man. Spoiler alert, that photographer is in fact Peter Parker, but don't tell anyone. After deducing his foe's identity, the Goblin would aim to strike a Peter's heart by threatening Aunt May and giving her a heart attack, then kidnapping Mary Jane Watson. During their epic encounter, Peter would try to leave the Goblin incapacitated for the police, but the Goblin refused to stay down, activating his Goblin glider to attack. Peter's Spider Sense, an extraordinary ability that warns him of imminent danger, would activate, and after dodging a strike, the Goblin would be impaled by his own glider. In the sequel, which is widely accepted as being the best of the Sam Raimi trilogy, we get to see a college-bound Peter Parker take on Dr. Otto Octavius, or Dr. Octopus. Now, since 2004, the character of Doc Ock has gone a resurgence. I like to believe it all stemmed from his portrayal in this film. Doc Ock was not portrayed as a mad scientist, but as a tragic figure who lost control in his passion amidst a tragic accident. While the comic version of the character is still a large egotist, he's had many redeeming moments since then. For this film, he has the ultimate redemption when he sacrifices himself to save New York after finding out that Spider-Man is actually his young protege, Peter Parker. A never-infamous scene of this movie is one where Peter has to keep a metro train from going off the rails, and proceeds to stretch his limits to the max, shooting multiple webs and holding them tight with his bare hands as he uses his own body to slow the train to a stop. An infamous moment that is well-acted and beautifully brought together by the wonderful score. The third film in 2007 was considered mediocre compared to what came before. There are multiple reports that Sam Raimi was unhappy as he was supposedly forced by the studio executives to add the Venom character. Venom being a character whose origins gets a retcon every few years. For this adaptation, the symbiotic lifeform came from an asteroid and attached itself to Peter's suit and began to alter Peter's chemistry, causing him to behave more violently, and even committing to a dance sequence that... Oh, come on, guys, it wasn't that cringy. Everyone makes fun of it, but I'm telling you, after I walked out that theater, I had my shirt collar popped up, jamming down the street, pointing the finger guns at any who passed. And while I'd like to say I got as good a reaction as Toby, I also didn't get paid thousands of dollars to do it. I digress. The symbiote would attach itself to Eddie Brock, a rival photographer who hates Peter Parker with a passion. And hey, the enemy of my enemy is my new bestie. Also featured in the film is Sandman and the New Goblin, characters that Sam Raimi was more happy to expand on, as he happily wrote in that Sandman was there the night Uncle Ben died, and turned Harry Osborn into a villain, and then to a hero, again as he takes on his father's mantle of the Goblin. Peter would end up teaming with Harry. Harry would die in a way similar to his father, being impaled by his own goblin glider, and Venom would be vaporized by a pumpkin bomb after being weakened by a sonic circle trap. Sandman would be allowed to walk away after making peace with Peter, and admitting that he never meant for his Uncle Ben to die. And with that, the Sam Raimi trilogy would end. A gross overview, but as I said, we were only covering quick tidbits here and there. To paint a picture with broad strokes, Sony actually had the option to purchase the entire Marvel libraries as film rights. They elected to only purchase Spider-Man, as they didn't think people would be willing to pay to watch films starring any of the other characters. And after the battle that took place to make the third film, Sam Raimi dropped out of making a fourth, even though there was rampant speculation that it could feature any of Spider-Man's rogues, including the Lizard, Electro, Rhino, and more. Now, keep in mind, at this point, there was no MCU. The only Marvel movies at this point were Blade, Fantastic Four, and the early X-Men movies. And DC only had the beginning of the Dark Knight trilogy to offer. These movies helped to change the landscape of comic books in the film industry, but without Sam Raimi's vision, the path ahead seemed less clear. The first of the amazing duology started in 2012. We would say goodbye to Tobey Maguire and hello to Andrew Garfield. This iteration of the character would be a bit more closely honed to the ultimate version, as we would see many allusions to the secret past appear as his parents prior to their deaths. Instead of Mary Jane Watson, we would get Emma Stone as Gwen Stacy, the original love interest in Spider-Man comics lore. Instead of reusing some of the classic villains from the prior continuity, Sony would use the advanced CGI technology to bring the Lizard to life. The next entry would bring three different villains together. Though the villain primarily focused on was Jamie Foxx's iteration of Electro. While these fights would be epic with an incredible Hans Zimmer score, the much talked about scene of this movie would be when the new version of Harry Osborn would appear as the Green Goblin, and Harry would recreate one of the most heartbreaking scenes of Spider-Man history, throwing Gwen Stacy from the top of a tower. Peter would attempt to save Gwen and shoot a web when he couldn't catch up to her accelerated descent. While the web would wrap around her torso, Gwen's head would snap back and slam into the concrete below, killing her. While Electro had died earlier, Harry lived to be incarcerated, although it's implied that he plans to get a team together, starting with Rhino. Now, with the duology running from 2012 to 2014, the MCU had just completed Phase 1 of their epic film universe. The X-Men were dealing with not quite a reboot, and DC had just launched the beginning of their own attempt at a shared superhero cinematic universe with the Man of Steel. Sony wanted to throw their hat in on the trend, planning a spin-off film for The Sinister Six, a female-led project starring the character of Felicia Hardy, or Black Cat, in a solo flick for Venom, which would actually see the light of day in 2018. Sony had wanted to make a whole universe around the Andrew Garfield Spider-Man, but unfortunately, due to the disappointing box office for the second film, scrapped scripts, directors bailing, and all-around development hell, most of these plans went into the trash bin. But as revealed in the infamous 2014 Sony Pictures hack, Sony had actually begun talks with Marvel about including Spider-Man in the MCU. Though initial talks turned sour when Sony held firm that they maintained rights to the films. Obviously, we know how this would eventually turn out. But Sony keeping their grip on the rights is why you won't be watching any of these films on Disney Plus anytime soon. Alright guys, so I know I said I was going to save Civil War and all that for another day, but it's actually kind of difficult to describe Tom Holland's place in film history without covering at least a little bit of his time, so I'm not going to go into detail, but there are going to be spoilers as we cover the MCU. So, as Phase 3 of Marvel would begin in 2016, it would be revealed that a new actor would be taking on the role of Spider-Man, and the Spider-Man continuity would be rebooted once again. This time, taking on the role would be Tom Holland, a man who could easily portray the youthful naivety found in classic Spider-Man. Now, he would be in Captain America Civil War, immediately ingraining the character with every other character of the shared universe, especially its founder, Iron Man, who would be taking on the role of his mentor. Continuing into his own solo film, Homecoming, the story would follow Peter as he struggles with wanting to be more than just a local, small-time hero, or quote-unquote, friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. He wants to step out of Iron Man's shadow and be seen as an equal, and in his attempts, he decides to take on the Vulture by himself. Supporting Tom is Ned Leeds, a character who was more known for becoming the Hobgoblin in comics, but has seemingly been adapted to be Pierce's right-hand man, more in a role similar to Genki with Miles Morales. There's also Michelle, as played by the always amazing Zendaya, who pulls off lazy but well-accomplished character well, and has great chemistry with Peter and Ned. The love interest for this film is Liz Allen, who would actually be the Vulture's daughter, after recreating an iconic panel from the comics and film of Peter pushing his spider strength to the max and lifting tons of rubble off his bedroom but be an embattled body. Peter would save Vulture from his own technology and incapacitate him to be arrested. Liz would move because of this, making way for the reveal that Michelle goes by a certain nickname, MJ. Further cementing his place in the MCU, Peter would have an emotional moment in Infinity War, being killed when Thanos successfully wipes out half of all life. He would return in Endgame alongside the rest of the MCU roster and take part in an epic cinematic battle for the ages that would conclude in his mentor Iron Man making the ultimate sacrifice to help set things right. To close out Phase 3, Spider-Man Far From Home sees Peter attempting to woo MJ during a field trip while dealing with the machinations of the manipulative Mysterio. While Peter would ultimately use his evolving spider sense to defeat him, Mysterio had one last trick up his sleeve, releasing altered footage that would pin the blame of a widespread attack on Spider-Man, and subsequently revealing to the public that Spider-Man is Peter Parker. While at this point, on May, MJ, Ned, and the majority of the MCU heroes, and even the Vulture, knew his secret identity. To have it blown out to the public like this is going to lead to some strong consequences in the sequel. And much like the continuities that came before, this third film almost didn't happen. Talks between Sony and Marvel began to deteriorate, with money reportedly being the central issue. Tom Holland boldly used what sway he had over both parties to encourage them to come together for the sake of the fans, leading to a renewed deal, one that seemingly could tie in the Venom films, as well as the upcoming Morbius the Living Vampire film. Alright guys, we're going to take a break, hear a word from our sponsor, and then I'm going to be giving you guys my personal ranking of the Spider-Man actors, and also going over some of the trailers for No Way Home. Now that we have covered some of the key info, let me tell you how I rank the actors and their portrayals of Spider-Man. Tobey Maguire had his strengths, with his iconic and infamous scenes still being remembered today. The design of his suit had enough differences to make it stand out, as it was an early attempt at making this comic book superhero feel larger than life as it was being adapted. Toby has a lot of pros, as they did try to stick to the source material, but there was only a surface level to it. The only major plot lines referenced are the origin story and the Spider-Man No More story arc. Spider-Man 3 takes many liberties, even retconning a portion of the origin story. And of course, the most glaring change being that instead of having developed web shooters, the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man somehow developed the ability to shoot organic web fluid straight from his wrist. While Tobey had one of the more wittier Spider-Men, this made him be seen as one of the less intelligent. Andrew Garfield, of course, had more of a cool character feel, though this mostly comes from the fact that he is the most attractive Spider-Man. His suit was more streamlined. The writers took cues from both the mainline source material and the alternate Ultimate line. His focus on Gwen Stacy led to a heartbreaking recreation of the infamous death scene, and Andrew worked that scene beautifully, with it still sticking out in my mind. I had full knowledge that Gwen would die in this movie, but Andrew conveyed the tragic heartbreak and loss so well that I found myself shedding tears shamelessly. Along with some sharp wit, athletic fighting capability, and a sleek look, Andrew ranks higher with me personally than with most. Tom Holland is marvelously talented, excuse the pun. Though I will say he may suffer from recency bias, he has certainly proven his dedication to the fans, pulling off diplomatic peace talks in the way a real Peter Parker would. He's the youngest of all the actors, successfully pulling off the youthful look of high school Peter Parker. It took a while for him to really break past the naivety and into the witticisms, but that was intentional and forever set him apart. He's proven to be the most intelligent, making his own web shooters and eventually designing his own suit using Stark technology. He's also the only iteration to have two successful love interests, though the real-life romance between him and Zendaya can no longer be denied. And while he hasn't been one to 100% adapt a story arc, he has recreated iconic panels and even committed to scenes that felt like callbacks to prior films. He's the only iteration to be an Avenger, albeit briefly, the only one to go to space, and the only one to interact with other superheroes. That said, he's also the only one to have his identity outed so publicly. There's not much working against Tom Holland at this point. He may not be the most seasoned, the most attractive, or the most athletic, but that's also what makes his iteration the most relatable. To give my final ranking, I am to once again state that this is only my personal opinion and is by no means an unbiased account of who truly is the best Spider-Man, and in no way do I want to discredit the accomplishments either of these men have made to the franchise. But I will rank them as follows. Number 3. Tobey Maguire. Number 2. Tom Holland. Number 1. Andrew Garfield. I'm giving Andrew the edge simply because while the movies were derided, he was a shining beacon. He was the Spider-Man that didn't get the fair shot or a fitting conclusion to his story. Tobey had his trilogy, and was the first ever. Tom has the MCU, and will forever be remembered for this role and for being one of the busiest men in Hollywood. But Andrew had to take over the reins with unhappy fans, lackluster writing, and early CGI technology. But he pulled it off and was impressive enough to at one point be considered as the leader of a standalone Spider-Man universe. I'd honestly prefer seeing him against Tom Hardy instead of the Battle of the Toms. Alright, so I hope you guys paid attention to those quick rundowns. I've covered best friends, love interests, main actors, and villains. That's all going to prove important as I start looking at these trailers and give you guys my feedback as well as some theories for what could happen in the next film, Spider-Man No Way Home. Now I'm going to let the audio run, but I will be taking over them at talking over them at points. If you guys want to check out a clean copy of the trailers, they are both available on the Sony Pictures Entertainment YouTube channel, and they are both saved under a playlist for Spider-Man No Way Home, as well as some other special videos that we won't be covering on this podcast. Alright, so this first one is going to be the teaser trailer that was actually released on my birthday earlier this year, August 23rd, 2021. Alright, here we go. I apologize if it's going to be loud. I did turn the audio for this down. I didn't want to blow up the mic. All right, we get that classic shot. Now, we do confirm that Doctor Strange is going to be in this movie. Ooh. There we go. I love that they brought back J.K. Simmons to play J. Jonah Jameson. I love that. All right, so he's being interrogated. Aw. Still trying to go to high school. There's Aunt May. Oh, they're interrogating Aunt May and Ned, too. And that's how he goes to the... Okay, so this is definitely building off a certain story. What do I owe the pleasure? I'm sorry to bother you, sir. Please, save half the universe together. I think we're beyond you calling me, sir. That's fair. Steven. That feels weird, but I'll allow it. I love Benedict Cumberbatch. It looked like he was briefly wearing the black suit. Oh, he's totally gonna cast it. The entire world is about to forget that Peter Parker is Spider-Man. You feel like they would have discussed this before they started casting it. Okay. Ooh. Oh, man. So now we're going back to the multiverse. I saw some lightning there. Ooh. Spider-Man gets Astro Project. We got the Iron Spider suit. Happy. Sam, green, that's Willem Dafoe's laugh. That's Willem Dafoe's laugh. Be careful what you wish for, Parker. Oh. Oh my god, they brought them back. They brought back the actual actors. Okay. Okay, I love this. I love this. Okay. I'm so happy for this. Okay. So, it definitely seems like they are going to be adapting the One More Day storyline, basically in the comic books back in 2006 when they did the Civil War, the first Civil War in the comics. Spider-Man had joined Iron Man's side, and in the comics, obviously Spider-Man was more well-known than he was in the Civil War film adaptation, but at that point, he had been keeping his secret identity for years, and he actually publicly outs his secret identity when he signs with the Registration Force, and that leads to everyone knowing who he is. It actually leads to Aunt May dying. And Peter decides he wants to erase all that, and he goes to Doctor Strange to erase it. He also goes to Mephisto, which is, he's not Satan, because I'm pretty sure there actually is a Satan in the Marvel comics, but he's basically a ruler of a realm that is very similar to Hell. And he makes a deal with Mephisto to bring his Aunt May back, but Mephisto wants something in return, as most demons do. And he wants the love of him and of Peter and Mary Jane. Because at this point, Peter and Mary Jane had been married for so long. And Peter agrees to it. And we lose years of continuity when him and MJ are just no more. And so Peter gets his Aunt May back. Everyone, it's back to the status quo. No one knows that he's Spider-Man. And him and MJ's marriage basically never happened, and what the fuck? And there are still repercussions being felt to this day. Like, literally, last year, I believe it was, they had a quick subplot in the Amazing Spider-Man comics where him and Black Cat, who are, like, an on-again, off-again kind of deal with their relationship, Black Cat admits that she knows that at one point she did know who Spider-Man was, but she doesn't know now. And it upsets her that Peter trusted her at one point and that he didn't anymore. And then Peter reveals what his secret identity is to Black Cat. So the fact that, like, that story arc was, like, 2006, 2007, we're still feeling it in the 2020s. There's just so much, like, it's derided so much because of how much continuity it erased and how much it set the character back. But to be fair, in this trailer, we didn't see Mephisto. This trailer seems like it's focusing more on the multiverse aspect. Like, I heard Willem Dafoe's laugh. I saw the lightning in the sand. We saw the actor come back for Doc Ock, which I'm so happy about. Oh my god, this is such a love letter to the prior films. Oh man, I'm going to start playing the second trailer. I did notice on the sound levels that you guys probably aren't hearing the trailer, but in all honesty, that's probably good so I don't get sued for playing audio that doesn't belong to me, because I know that's what happens to Angry Joe every time he does a trailer reaction. So I'm going to be playing the official trailer, which was released November 16th of 2021 on Sony Pictures Entertainment's YouTube channel again. So let's check out what this trailer is about. I feel like you guys have seen these trailers anyway. Oh yeah, that quick clip right there. I saw Jamie Foxx. I'm so happy. Jamie Foxx is one of the best actors out there. Okay. Such a cute relationship. The films haven't really covered his high school relationship with MJ, so that's dope. Okay, the spell was botched. Reusing some footage. Black suit Spider-Man. Iron Spider Spider-Man right there. Oh man, he doesn't. So he knows that Tom Holland's. And that's Peter. I love that. Such fucking teenagers. Huh? Ooh. Okay, okay. I like that they kept the humor. Ooh. Ooh. Oh, man. Oh! Oh, I love that. I love that so much. It's so true to the character. So this is actually a fight scene between Strange and Peter. Oh, wow, shit. Okay, they redesigned Electro, which I'm fine with. Oh, man. Willem Dafoe. A Nevergoblin? Lizard? Sandman? Electro? Can't save everyone. Oh, shit. Oh, man. No. I got chills. What's that? Ooh. December 17th, exclusively at movie theaters. Tickets on sale November 29th, Spider Monday. Oh, my God. That's awesome. Oh my god. Okay, so they're bringing back the Lizard too. That's dope. Jamie Foxx got redesigned with his Electro because in the Amazing Duology he was like all blue, which there have been some iterations like that in the comics, but it looks like they're sticking more to the original iteration, not like the yellow and green, but like even just the way the lightning is forming on his face, it reminds me of the old school mask, which is dope. It briefly looked like Doc Ock was stealing Iron Man technology and embedding it within his tentacles. Doc Ock might be working with the kids, which would make sense because there's only three Spider-Men. And if you take Doc Ock away from the villain side and put him on the good guy side, then that's four against four, not counting MJ and Ned. MJ's fall. Oh my god. Okay. And the black suit Spider-Man, which in the first trailer, you see Tom's wearing the black suit. And in this trailer, you see Tom is going after MJ. Here's my theories. Okay. Because in this trailer, you don't see Tom wearing the black suit. And if anything, you actually see that this Spider-Man, I don't know if Doctor Strange is using magic on him or if this Spider-Man knows magic somehow. I think that the black suit Spider-Man is actually going to be the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man. And the main reason I think that is because in this trailer, it looked like this black suit had the pronounced webbing that's prominent on the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man suit. So I feel like this could be Tobey Maguire, like maybe the Venom symbiote reattached itself to Peter in this timeline. I'm not sure. Andrew Garfield. Oh my gosh. Okay. This is a big one. When MJ falls, I don't think Tom Holland's going to be able to catch her. I think Andrew Garfield's going to catch her to make up for his failure of saving Gwen Stacy, and I will cry. No shame. I will bawl my eyes out if that's the scene. I'm already tearing up thinking about it, thinking of Andrew Garfield finally getting that closure and being able to save someone close to him. Maybe Andrew Garfield gets to stay in this universe, and he meets Gwen Stacy, who then becomes Spider-Gwen, because why not? It would just be awesome. Oh my god, there's so many big theories happening right now. Like, there was purple streaks in the sky at the end of that trailer. Like, I know that it's implied that that's just the timelines fracturing and the multiverse kind of, like, coming in. What if it's something else? What if it's Kang the Conqueror, which if you guys have seen the Loki television series, you know that's coming. What if it's something to do with the Eternals? I haven't seen that yet, so I'm not sure, but I'm pretty sure the Celestials are also pretty purplish in color with their power energy. And, oh, man, what if it's, like, Marvel's What If? Like, because I'm pretty sure the pocket universe that the Doctor Strange in Marvel's What If episode 4, that's what he, like, confides himself in. There's just so much happening here, guys. I'm so excited. I want to know why we barely saw Ned in that second trailer. I feel like Ned's going to have such a small role here, unless maybe that new goblin is Ned. I doubt it, because the physique did not match. But the CGI, that lately Marvel just loves playing tricks on you with trailers, so who knows. It could be Harry Osborn taking on the new goblin role, although the goblin glider looks more traditional than like the snowboard style that Harry played, that James Franco's Harry used. I haven't even heard that they're bringing James Franco back, but then again, they kept the fact that they brought Jamie Foxx back secret. Oh my god, dude, this is just an awesome trailer, and I already know tickets are sold out probably. I'm not going to be seeing it opening weekend. But this is awesome, guys. I'm so excited for this movie. It's a love letter to the generations that have come before. I literally grew up watching these movies. When the first ever Spider-Man film came out in 2002, I was 7. Yeah, it was in May of 2002, so I was 7 years old. Think about that. Like, I've literally grown up with this character, seeing all these iterations. And this is a love letter to my childhood, to my teenage years, and now to my current never-ending love for all things comics. All right, guys, after all that, I hope you enjoyed the debut episode of Comic Chatter. Right now, I am currently attempting to read all of the titles in DC's New 52 run, which spanned 2011 to 2016. Future episodes of Comic Chatter could see me cover titles from this run, as well as new adaptations such as DC's Titans or Marvel's What If. But next week, we're going to be going back to Mystery Motel to cover the second Great Ace Attorney Chronicle. So until then, much love from me to you. And please, for the love of Stan Lee, don't spoil the movie for everyone. Have some class. All right, guys, enjoy the rest of your day.